is on. How's that? Can you guys hear me? Good morning. Hi, good morning. Welcome to the Saturday called Revved Up. My name is Kathleen. I'm a compulsive eater, bulimic. Hi, and welcome. I know there's not many of us who've been able to go to a meeting where you can eat and hear a fabulous speaker all at the same time, so this is a very special event. I'm just going to introduce our speaker. How's this? Is that better? Okay. I'm going to have to speak right into the microphone. So I'm going to introduce our speaker for this morning. Her name is Lillian, and she's going to share her experience, strength, and hope. And so if you can please please warmly join me in welcoming Lillian.
Hi, Lillian.
Hi, I'm Lillian, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and happy to be here, even though I was at about 6:30 this morning when the wake-up call came, and I said, what was I thinking? What have I gotten into? Then I thought, I hope you guys don't feel that way when we leave. So I did bring some props, because it's a long pitch. You know, the subject of today's breakfast is on awakening. So when I heard that, I thought I should know what that is. So, to make sure I didn't forget, because I haven't read it for a couple of hours, right, I brought the book. So it's page 86 of the big book, and it is. Oh, very hard for me to pause for a minute. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. I'm sure we all, well, I guess we all remember being 8 or 10 and saying, oh, God, please, I want a bicycle, I want my ski, I want this, I want to go here, I want to do that. And I think it's a natural enough thing to do until we learn better. So now we're awakened, and I don't know how many of you like usually do exercises or stretches or something in the morning when you get up before you go out. And I don't want to be working up here all alone. So I thought if you could join me. I don't want to interrupt breakfast, and I don't want to make anyone stop eating. But just a few minutes of like just some stretches, it'll be really good. We'll be so happy we've done it. Okay, here we go. We're in this together. One, two. I mean, I don't want to be Sheila Clough or somebody, but, you know. Okay, now let's do one series like this. Don't hit each other. Don't bend anybody up. Yes, if you want to show off, touch your toes. Okay, now just one like this. It's a short version, and one like that. Oh, okay, and now we feel a little bit awake. Okay, yay. So, okay, I brought some more readings, but I don't want to do it all at one time. And at first when he said on awakening, I didn't know if it meant metaphorically or really. So I was relieved. It was really on awakening in the morning. What do you do? And there is also the metaphorically, like in the program, when you first come in, little by little, maybe when I started, I first came about 44 years ago, just to do a little experience, strength, and hope. And the fact that I've been abstaining, last July was 21 years, tells you, obviously, I didn't get it right away. So it took a while. And I was here for several years, and then I was gone. I took off like 15 years, so sort of hiatus in the middle there, because I just got very busy, and I thought, I can't do this, and I thought, it's not something you can dabble in. You can't, like, do it on the week, during the week, but on the weekend, eat what you want, even though God knows I have. But you can't, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work if it's not like a living, breathing part of your life. And it isn't, so I just said, I can't do this. And while I was out there, I have to say, I wasn't just eating, I was doing research. I checked out everything, the pregnant women's diet, the shots, the Optifast, which is brilliant. I think I lost 50 pounds in 3 months. And it took at least 6 months to put it back. So I thought that was pretty good, you know. I didn't put it back faster. There aren't too many diets that I missed along the way. And I found out, like, everything works. They all work. All you have to do is work them. And the trouble is, and I have many friends who are not compulsive eaters who you'd see, and they put on a little weight, and they say, oh, I'm going on a diet. And I say, oh, it's great, you know, Jenny Craig, whatever it may be. And you see them a couple of months later, and they've lost the weight. I said, well, what happened? They said, well, I said I was going on a diet to lose the weight. I said, yes, but I said that too. I'm the same size. How did you do that? They wake up and they do it and they stick to it without divine intervention or anything else. And I say, God bless them. They're not compulsive eaters. Somehow my children are not. I mean, now they're like in their 30s, so I think it's pretty safe that they're not. You never know. It's one day at a time. But when I'm with them and we're somewhere and there's dessert, there's cake or whatever, and they'll have a bite or two, and I say, oh, what's the matter? It's not good. You don't like it? No, I had enough. It's like, thank you, God. I look at them like, are they mine? How strange is that? And I'm just grateful. They have enough to deal with, you know. Anyway, so when I came back to the program, it was July 3rd of 92, and I was about 225, so maybe 65, 75 pounds more than now. And I was thoroughly depressed and was getting divorced, and my kids were both away, camp or summer school, and all the excuses were gone. And I'd run into a friend the day before. We were having dinner, and he said, what's the matter with you? You look like shit. Your hair, you got fat. What the hell's going on here? And I tell you, this was my Eskimo. And he died recently, a couple of years ago. And I went home and I looked and I said, oh shit, he's right. And I went to the meeting the next day. There's a wonderful Saturday afternoon Valley meeting. And I asked the toughest lady there to be my sponsor. And I thought, ah, she's going to be totally unavailable. Yeah, I'd love to. I couldn't be. And she was my sponsor for about the first several years back, and then she moved up to Santa Barbara. But what happened is that very first night, you know, July 3rd, I was going to the Hollywood Bowl with people, and, you know, everyone with the food, and here, eat this, taste that. And I just said, please, God, if I can make it through this, I can make it through anything. And I had my little chicken breast and my carrot and celery sticks and all that, and I didn't offer them to anybody. And nobody looked like they wanted them. But I didn't care, because I sat there, and somehow, truly God's will, not my will. And so I was able to make it through that night and 21 years, keep going, and keep going. And, of course, it's a bitch when you start, because at first, those first few weeks are like, you don't have the joy and the euphoria of seeing a weight loss, and you're deprived of all these foods. And isn't it amazing how the tools of the program come in, like right around then, if you have a sponsor and you start with those steps and going to meetings and making phone calls, writing down the food, calling it in every day, and there's a lot of stuff I bitch about, and I don't like this, and why do I have to do this, and I like the debate society. Why can't I eat that? Well, if I'm going here, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? After a while, you just get sick of yourself, you know, and you just say, or your sponsor says to you, maybe if you just shut up and listen, that would help. I mean, that's a thought, you know? And so I tried that for a while, and it was amazing how much simpler life got. That I would just say, I don't agree with this, I don't like it, but all right, I'll do it anyway. Let's just see. So that I could tell her after, oh, this didn't work, that was a bad idea, right? Damn it, you know, that it didn't happen. It just made my life a lot better and simpler. So anyway, now part of my awakening and being part of the program was always reading something or meditating, doing something when I wake up in the morning. And now it's like something I can't imagine not doing. Just to take a beat, was, okay, and just sort of think about the day ahead. What do I have to do? Potential problems? Do I need to write? Sometimes I need to call my sponsor. I can't make a decision about something, whatever it may be. So I just wanted to read. This is the 24-hour day book. Just read today's. Today is January 18th, right? Yeah. Okay. Thought for the day. This is from the AA book. The new life can't be built in a day. We have to take the program slowly, a little at a time. Our subconscious minds have to be reeducated. We have to learn to think differently. We have to get used to sober thinking instead of alcoholic thinking. Anyone who tries it knows that the old alcoholic thinking is apt to come back on us when we least expect it. Building a new life is a slow process, but it can be done if we really follow the OA program. Am I building a new life on the foundation of sobriety? Meditation for the day. I will pray daily for faith, for it is God's gift. On faith alone depends the answer to my prayers. God gives it to me in response to my prayers because it is a necessary weapon for me to possess for the overcoming of all adverse conditions and the accomplishment of all good in my life. Therefore, I will work at strengthening my faith. Prayer for the day. I pray that I may so think and live as to feed my faith in God. I pray that my faith may grow because with faith, God's power becomes available to me. And part of the thing of not only being in OA longer and living longer is the prints getting smaller and smaller. I don't know how. And I forgot home. I do the little reading glasses. So here it's like, okay, I found the right angle. Anyway, all of those things help. Some days when I wake up, like it screams at me. I'll be like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. You know what? I have to deal with something on this day. And here it is exactly written for me, just what I needed to hear. And the days that it isn't, when it's more generic, I just say, thank you, God. It can still apply in the course of the day. So when I came back, I was good and loyal and followed all the rules and just did everything that I was told to do. And, you know, little by little, you start... like relaxing. I don't mean about the food. I mean just in life, you know. You start feeling a little bit comfortable. Because at first, I mean, it's normal, I think, and natural when you're making this huge change in your life to have a little bit of panic and think, oh, my God. You know, because we are, or I am compulsive, and that many diets in the past, I do great. And one bite off, one thing I shouldn't have, and that's it. It's over. Forget about it. Why am I even trying? And it's a pattern over many, many years. You say, okay, I don't want to repeat that pattern. When I'm in doubt, make a phone call, stop. And we have lots of slogans and cliches that are so handy. That's like, when in doubt, leave it out. If you don't know what to do, don't. These are all things that help me a whole lot. And so many of the cliches, I realized I used to think that they were like a bad thing. But it's not. A cliche becomes that because people say it so much and use it so much that it's true. So I thought, okay, cliche is not a bad word. It's something that can help me a lot. So after, I guess, the first time I got a one-year candle, I was like disbelief. Because so many times in my previous time at OA, I would get 10 months or 11, whatever. Excuse me. And that would be it. I would like blow it somehow. So when I actually hit a year, I was like thrilled, as you can imagine. And then I found how much easier it gets when you become more involved in the program. When if you're doing a service, either as a secretary or literature or clean up in the kitchen or whatever it may be, just doing something. And I would realize I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it because if I get involved, then I'm there. If I have a commitment, because some of us, when we come in, self-esteem is sort of an issue, like we don't have any. And so I'm not going to do it if it's me because I'm worth it and I deserve it. No, but if I've committed to someone else and I'm going to do it, well, then I have to show up because maybe they have self-esteem. So it was a great way to really get started and get involved at the meeting level and to be my sponsor. And then to sponsor other people as much as you can, which was also a very scary thing because you say, oh, my God, how can I be responsible for someone else's life and everything else? And then you talk to you realize you're not. All you're doing is sharing your experience, strength, and hope with them. What you don't know is I don't know. You know, we don't know all the answers, and we're not professionals. And if someone seems to have a really serious problem beyond you, then I have to suggest that they get professional help. You know, that it's sort of beyond my realm. I can't deal with that. But most of the time, if you can't help them, you can maybe direct them to another sponsor that can. Someone that's had more of their specific experience. But very often it's life, and it's just dealing with life. And, okay, when this happened to me, here's what I did. I can't tell you what to do. I can just tell you, here's what I would do, or here's what I did do if it happened, or things specifically may be different, but they there's the same sort of category of stuff that you have to deal with. Pressures and tensions, and life isn't going like you want it, and this should have happened. I prayed for this, and I got that. And that happens so often, I think, to us all. Sarah, could God know more than me? Could there be a reason why that was the better thing? And, okay, after a while in the program, I certainly wasn't like this when I got here, because lack of patience is my one of my main character defects. I pray, but it's still here. But I have to say, it's gotten better. You just say, okay, let's, if I don't have to do anything right this minute, do nothing, and let it sit, whatever the issue may be. And sometimes it becomes clear, and you say, oh, my God, I never would have thought of that. So we say, trust in God, she'll provide, you know? And that happens eventually, most of the time. I mean, I've had situations, just minor, minuscule examples, but several years ago, I was working, and I parked my car, and the valet guy in the office building said, when I came back down, he said, you know, the guy over there said there's a scratch on his car. It's this brand new black Mercedes, shiny. And we're looking, there's no scratch. There's nothing. He said, well, listen, he'd like your name and number and insurance and all that. I said, what? Listen, I'm in a hurry. I'll do it later and all that. And he said, well, can we have it now? And, okay. So I give him my information. I go, I come back, and somehow I think, all right, I better call this. He wants you to call him and talk to him, and he's going to go to an insurance company. I said, but there's nothing. And somehow I'm like livid. I'm furious. There's nothing there. And I have to, so I call up, and I'm like so steamy, and I say, hi, I'm so sorry about your car. It's so beautiful. That's such a pity that you feel it's been scratched. How can I help you? What can I do? Will you take it to your Mercedes place, and I'm sure they'll fix it? And I'm thinking, who is this talking? This is not me. Those words are not coming out of my mouth. I'm furious. I'm telling you, it's a small example of, like, God's will, because I stop. Okay. Don't say it. Whatever I say now is going to be wrong. Don't do anything. And just pray for a minute. Pray for the answer and all of that. And so I saw that it does happen. It's very much like last night's brilliant play, which wasn't that fabulous and all that. Yay! Thank you. But there was that moment when Cousin Ego was there. And you say, Ego, next time you're in town, won't you come and see me and let's spend some time? I mean, there is nothing better than to disarm somebody that is expecting to really get a hard time from you or a rise or a challenge or a fight, to take that away. And then they're like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it always works, I mean, but it has worked many, many times in the past. Many, many times in the past for me. And I'm sure it would for others. We have, if I get sick of hearing my own voice talking, I'll just do another reading. I sort of tried to space them out. Okay, it's my last reading. And this is the other one that I do every day. It's a regular on awakening. This is food for thought, and it is today. Abstain or overeat? For the compulsive overeater, there was always one primary choice to be made. Will I abstain or will I overeat? For us, there is nothing in between. If we have hundreds of pounds to lose, or if we have reached and are maintaining our goal weight, the choice is still the same. It is the key decision we make many, many times each day. We are free at each moment to choose which we will do. There is no magic which will make us abstain, and there is no force which can compel us to swallow food we do not need. The choice is ours alone. No one graduates from OA. There is no point at which one can say, this is it, I've got it made now. We are always aware of the fact that we are compulsive overeaters and are always one bite away from a binge. When we remember that abstaining or overeating is our primary choice, then other decisions become easier. To abstain is to choose life. To overeat is to choose death. May I maintain constant awareness of my primary choice. Thank you, God. And I realize it's very different for anorexics or bulimics, but again, that's a, I've never had. I can't deal with it. And I'm hoping there's other literature, I'm sure there must be, that deals more specifically with that. But it's all a matter of food is not the problem. Food has been our solution for so long, and now it isn't, but we don't need it because we have all these other solutions. We have all the tools and the inventories. And like, you know, when I get stuck and I can't deal with something, say, when did I last write? And I've done several fourth steps over the years. I think I'm in the midst of one now that is at home as a work in progress. But there's also the 10th steps of the program, which is a wonderful thing to do, to just, if something happened this day or that day that You know, when you try all of your decisions and you try all the thinking of different options, nothing works. So then invariably I would call my sponsor and say, oh, this happened. I don't know what to do. Have you written about it? No. Okay. All right. Write it out. And maybe it's a half a page or a couple of paragraphs. And sometimes in the writing, it's like when you make a list of things you have to do. Very often, I don't have to look at the list again. I've written it down. But if taking that action has it in my head, but it's the same thing, writing about it. It's like it almost leaps off the page. Okay, I know what I have to do, much as I don't want to. I had a situation just a few months ago. I had gone to a dinner at a friend's house, and other friends who were sort of hadn't been invited, and I said, terrible. They don't know, but if they know, they'd feel worse. But if they don't know, she said, you know, okay, take a beat. Basically, the bottom line was shut your mouth. You don't need to share this information. It's unnecessary, and it's going to do no good. And you know how sometimes things pass where in the moment, I was like this much more younger, in the 20s or so, where everything has to be dealt with now, and this is so important, and this is crucial. And, say, and you would think you would learn it just from living longer. And it's a combination, I think, of program and living longer. That you realize, no, this, everything doesn't have to be done right now. It's a compulsive nature. It's like, I must take care of it. I must finish. I want to finish this and move on to that. And say, well, you know, unfortunately, I mean, as much as I love closure and I like things to be, some of these things aren't ready to be closed. And you just can't deal with it. It is the goddamn hardest thing in the world to just say, okay, to let it go. For example, this, which I'm almost finished with, November a year ago, I got this, my knee hurt, and I was just going off on this South American cruise, and I go to the doctor, and I get a shot, and all of this, and I go, and I'm running around in emergency rooms in Buenos Aires and places, and I come back, and we go to the orthopedic guy, he says, there's a fracture. You know, they did an MRI, which they couldn't do over there. They didn't have the equipment, whatever. And so we can't do anything. So this was last, you know, December I came back. And I go several times, we do MRIs. No, we have to wait for it to heal some more, et cetera, et cetera. The important thing about this is they also started a wonderful relationship at that time, which I realized in many ways wouldn't have lasted if I didn't have this knee thing to make me go slower. Because I tend to be, as you know, and it forced me to move slower, to not do as much, to not go so many places and all of that. So I say, God, isn't there an easier way you could have done that, you know, but maybe not. Anyway, so finally, this November, I just got fed up, and I went to a doctor so many people had recommended, and he looked at my MRI. I carry my MRIs with me. I said, here, I'm going to take a look, okay? Takes the MRIs, he does all the stuff. He said, well, you can do what you want, but there's no bone. There's nothing left to fix. So, okay, so we scheduled the thing for the next week. It was November 11th. I'm thrilled. I mean, the recovery was great. I have a scar. I have a new knee. And all of this time, if that wasn't an exercise in patience, I don't know what is, because I basically, I'm very impatient, you know, and I like things to happen now and all that. And it just forced me to walk slower, to take like particular exercises, not for the body, just specifically for the knee, and to do this stuff. And then afterwards you do the ice machine. It's like 6 hours of the day recuperating between the ice machine and the thing that lifts your knee. And sometimes you just lay there and watch this machine just lifting your knee, lifting your knee. I said, boy, whoever invented that, were they brilliant? You know, and I'm very grateful. And he's, oh, it's really fast recovery, and I'm feeling good. And now I just have to have it like for these stairs. I'm very glad I have them, and for balance, and just if you might have a long day or something. But it's little by little, I'm weaning off of it. So, at any rate, it's just like God's way. So at first, I was not thrilled to have this happen. I was really far, far from thrilled. And little by little, over the time, you say, there's a make a message. There's some reason why this would happen. I've never had any fractures. I don't know what happened. I don't know how it gets fractured, and you don't know it, but somehow it did. So at any rate, it's healing and it's surviving. And several years ago, I took off for a while. I quit my job and I went and joined the Peace Corps, and I was in the wonderful country of Macedonia for 28 months. And I've been back 2 years. It was a great experience. There is no OA. There is no AA. There's a lot of people that eat and drink a lot. And most people in the villages have a still in their basement where they make this rakia. It's like a homegrown sort of vodka family, but really strong. And you go to those houses and have a shot and have this and have that. Now, I'm not an alcoholic, fortunately, because I throw up before I get drunk. So I couldn't be. And that's a gift from God. I'll have a couple of drinks and all, and like, I'm done. I'm like, thank you, God. And smoking, somehow, I stopped 36 years ago when I was pregnant. I don't know how I put the cigarette down. I've been smoking 2 packs a day for years, and I don't know where that came from either. But I don't care anymore. Grass, not tobacco, nothing. So I just say, thank you, God. and why ask questions? It's good. I'm happy. Leave it alone. At any rate, so while I was over there, I could keep, thank God, in this electronic age, we have Skype, we have emails, we have find ways to make free phone calls, and all of that. So you could be in touch, and I could be talking, and I could be writing and sending emails and all of that. And that was fine, and it wasn't too challenging. And there was one day we were at the parents of my host family, and they made lunch, and they make wonderful meals, and they're not like big sweet eaters, which is my issue. My issue is what I didn't do to say that. What I don't have sugar is my killer. Cake, candy, all of those recreational fun sugar foods I don't eat, and I don't eat bread, but I do the things which I realized a while ago is like the unleavened bread, a matzah, tortilla, pizza, things that are flat that maybe don't have yeast because I don't know much nutrition-wise, but I know that seems to become sugar, and that's what I can't handle, and things that I can't eat like a lady, things that I can't have one bite and say, oh, that was nice, things that I can't leave on the plate because I have some and I'm thinking about it and I want more and all that, that's I know what I don't eat. So whereas my abstinence isn't perfect and always making the healthiest choices or the greenest foods, it is perfect in that I don't eat what's not on my abstinence, I don't eat. Within it, there are issues, and you have to be careful, you know, and pay attention and all of that, and being careful as we can. And it's three meals a day, maybe a snack, really depending on how long the day is, because sometimes it's like 10 hours between lunch and dinner. Yes, then I have a snack in between. However, you know, my feeling, it's the food you consume in the course of the day that matters. How you do it is something else. But this is what I can eat. And when you're traveling, 24 hours is 24 hours, no matter where you are. And sometimes it takes some adjusting and thinking about it. But again, if to fail to plan is to plan to fail. Wonderful statement. My God. And so you just sort of have to think, what time is it? Well, it doesn't matter what time is it there. What time is it in my stomach? Like, when did I eat and when did I? And just, and so the same thing. You don't need extra meals, whatever, because you can just plan it out. And the airlines make it so much easier by not giving us these meals and everything. So we have complete control. And we should just say thank you, you know? I mean, just bring what you want and eat it. So I can't complain about that. Anyway. I think that what the most valuable thing I could do maybe now, having droned on and on, is anyone has any questions, we can do Q&A if you feel like it. Or I'll just raise your hand anytime. I'll just keep going otherwise, because who could miss an opportunity to be the sole speaker with everyone in the room looking at you while you talk. At any rate, so today I've adjusted to the OA way of life completely, and I've discovered it doesn't matter what circumstances I'm in. Where, you know, everyone has situations sometimes that are difficult. I don't care how long you're abstaining. Life is there, and you have things to deal with. But the wonderful thing is we have the tools to deal with them. So I don't mean make it sound like everything like Pollyanna, woohoo, is everything always great. No. But there's always, like, a solution. And sometimes it's challenging, and we don't know what it is, but with all of these tools that we have, the sponsors, the phone calls, the books, the reading, the writing, how could there not be a solution somewhere in all of that if we're ready to look for it? Because I totally know the only reason I would blow my absence, whatever, because I would make a conscious decision to do that. And it's not anyone else's fault, and it's not the circumstances. And, you know, my mom passed away a few years ago. She was 101. She was ready. She was tired. It's okay, you know. But so I finally, maybe 30 years ago or so, stopped blaming them. I didn't have this. I didn't have that. Really, they didn't know any better. I was an only child. I was born when she was about 40 and had had a couple of stillborn and miscarriages. Talk about being God's gift to the world. I mean, being spoiled. Like, I didn't even know till I was in my 20s I was spoiled. I thought that's the way everyone is because I had a couple of other friends. It's really strange. Back in the Bronx, which you could never tell where I'm from. And we all were only children of older parents, and theirs were from Europe at that time were there. And we all had the same thing. The daughter got the bedroom. And the parents slept in an open couch in the living room. Yeah, exactly. I mean, think about that. That's the way it was. Who created that? I don't know. But that's what we did. So, at any rate, you really feel like you're special. And but on the other hand, it was, you know, it was a Jewish mother. They eat, you know, eat this. It's good for you. And at 10 years old, when I had to go to the school nurse, I had really bad back problems. And it was like over 150 pounds. Shouldn't have been. And my mother would come in and they gave her this very healthy diet, New York Board of Education. It was, you know, kind of like what Gracie would, proteins, fruits, vegetables, real. And I'd say, oh, it's good. Thank you. It's wonderful. Except in your home or when you go out with the family, well, it doesn't count. It's with love. It doesn't matter. Of course, years later, I realized if it's with love is when it matters the most. It's like when you want to make somebody healthy and feel good and not stuff them with food.
But years later, once I was on the program and I'd go home to visit and you'd eat this or eat, I could say no. And they say, oh, but you have to. It's so, oh, it's wonderful. You'll love it, you know. I said, well, that's okay. I don't need it. I did make a sort of attempt to explain this, and I gave it up. My mother went to Weight Watchers once. She learned two things. She learned you can't have one piece of toast. You don't have to have two. Okay? That was the revelation? Okay. What's the other thing? I don't know. But she got minimal usage out of that. And they'd always been heavy, and they didn't care. They weren't huge. You know, they lived okay. They were not into exercising. They certainly weren't into swimming or athletics or anything along those lines. It just wasn't them. So that's what I grew up with. So I didn't start swimming until I was like in my teens and met people who swam, you know. And like my mother was the worst cook in the world, which really made it not justifiable. Steaks would bounce. The first time I was at a restaurant with someone and had a steak and it just laid there and it was so soft and juicy. What is this? You know? And I couldn't tell her. Then I realized we didn't just think it was terrible. It was terrible. And one year we were on a vacation or something, and we brought her back like a gold-plated can opener because we said the instrument that's used the most in the kitchen. So that's what we gave her. But anyway, you know, there were certain limited dishes she made well. And I can make fun of her now. She would love it. She would love being thought about and paid attention to. You know, I absolutely know that. But there were all these things, you know, and I would listen to people who have the issues of abandonment and all of that. And I would think, you may not think there's another side of it, but there's smotherment, you know, and just being smothered by where you're going, what are you doing? No, you can't go here. And so when you get free of that, you really break free. I mean, I went from New York to L.A. And she said, no, but you don't have to go to there. You can do whatever you want here. You're free in New York. It's a big city. I said, that's okay. You know, I mean, I came here once and I looked at the sun and it was January and it was warm, not this warm, but warm. I said, this is it. This is like, why does anybody not live here? And of course, here is where I found OA because this is where the healthiest and most health conscious people are. So those of us that are maybe not so healthy really feel it a lot. And I would work with very super thin people and all of that. And then I'd realize they're not all thin gap to God. They work very hard and they say no to things and they have this thing called discipline about food. I mean, and I would see them turn this down or they'd have a bite. And I said, well, you can have more. Well, no, I don't want more, which was really a hard concept. But the others would say, well, yeah, but I don't want to gain weight. And I said, oh, okay. And it was just after a while, you'll need to just shut up, you know, and accept it and say, okay, so that I'd realize they work at it. They don't just, and some people, of course, don't care about food. There are those, you know. Many years ago, when my kids were little, one time I came into the kitchen and my husband was washing a leftover piece of birthday cake down the garbage disposal. And I was like, what are you doing? He said, well, I don't care about it. The kids don't like it. You're going to be sneaking out in the middle of the night forever to eat it. So why don't we just get it over with, you know? And I just stared at him. I think I was in between my program time. And I was, what can you say but thank you? I mean, you know, it's that many calories that I'm not eating. And yeah, he really understood my issues, my problems and all of that. And if he ever said anything when we were out to dinner with people about, do you really want that? Well, he's dead. You know, you just don't do that. And he learned, and he didn't do that after a while. Whereas a friend of mine would do that, and I'd say, oh, thank you, you're right, I don't really want that. Right? But it's funny what we like to take from different people and what we don't. Anyway, I'd like to know if anyone has any sort of questions or anything I could help with. Hi, Jerry. Okay. He asked, how would I describe an imperfect abstinence as against a break in abstinence? A break in abstinence creates an imperfect, and you can't have an, this is my feeling. This is just me. Many people will disagree. If you're abstaining, there is no imperfect abstinence in my mind. You're abstaining. If you break it, you're not abstaining. You start the next day, day one. It may sound simplistic and harsh, I don't know, but that's my thought. You're abstaining or you're not. You know, it's kind of black and white. But the important thing is, I think, to have a broad enough abstinence that you can live with it. Not to say I'm on an abstinence and I'm not touching this, not to make it impossible or so difficult that you can't live with it. That's why we work with a sponsor sometimes to say, yes, you have to have enough foods to eat to survive, and there has to be some food you like, some things you enjoy. You can't every day, oh, I hate this, you know. But within that circumference, that's it. That's my feeling. Anyway. Hi. She was, how did a higher power help in the early stage of recovery? It helped in every way. Now, again, the reason we have a sponsor is because we can't always totally trust ourselves to interpret what the higher power says properly. But so often I would just turn over to the higher power, go over what the situation is, and just take a breath and, like, wait. And it isn't always higher power says do this, you know. But somehow an answer would come that I know is not of my own making. That I don't know where it came from. But it was like, oh, I never thought of that. I would never have thought of that. And you just know it. And I wish I had a great example, but I don't. But when answers come, sometimes you're in your sleep, or you're not thinking about the issue. You've done your thing. You turn it over to the higher power, please, in whatever way you do it. And you're on doing things, and it just said, oh, my God, why didn't I think? You know, it's like so simple, but I wouldn't have thought of it. So that's how. And sometimes you have to do it many times on some situations. Okay, today I'm going to try again. I'm going to try again. And it just comes if your own house is in order, I guess, is the answer, you know. So thank you. Oh, hi. How did I stay in touch with programming the Peace Corps? Well, thank God for this electronic age, because years ago they didn't have all of this. But the country I was in had internet. I stayed in touch with the website, emailing to my sponsor and all. You can go online. I didn't avail myself of chat rooms. I wasn't sure how to do it. I'm not good at electronics. But I could do that. I had my books with me. I would call my sponsor on Skype, so it didn't cost anything. So we could talk, and I would email, and it worked fine. I came back once for a week in the middle of the 2 years, and it was fine. I couldn't have done it maybe 10, 15 years sooner. But having been so many years on the program and working it and abstaining, I knew what I could and couldn't have. And I said, look, if it's an international incident, I'm eating it. I'll take as little as I can, throw the rest on the floor or something. It really never happened. People didn't care so much. After all, even my colleagues that I worked with, the Macedonians, would get used to it. Somebody would come and say, candy for everyone. And say, oh, she doesn't want any. I said, you know, people just accept. If you believe it and you're really doing it, they totally accept it. I couldn't be like people say, well, I'm a vegetarian, but I'll have the meat today. You are or you're not, you know? I mean, then they sort of talk you into it because they say, oh, no, you're not. But if I said, no, I just don't eat that. I'm allergic. The sugar, it's bad. Whatever you say. I never said I'm a diabetic or anything. I'm not going to use that, you know. I'm not. But some people say anything to get people to leave you alone, you know. I didn't have to. After a while, a little bit you sort of explain, I can't. It's not good for me. I won't leave any for you. I'm going to take it. And it just goes away, and it's a non-issue. Well, that's a whole other story. You can talk to you after if you're thinking of joining. But there is no upper age limit, I will say that, to joining the Peace Corps. Let me think. How do you find your higher power? Can you share what it is? I think in my case, it's really God. God is my higher power. I didn't have a problem with that. I mean, I was raised Jewish in the traditional sense, but very minimal spiritual, very minimal. And I just always believed there was a God because I couldn't stand the thought that there is none. It's just too horrifying that we're it, you know. So I would say God is the higher power, you know. Now, I think time is up. Okay, one very quick question. What my physical recovery is? Well, I've lost about 65, 75 pounds. And I do swim class twice a week, water aerobics, because that was all I could do for this past year because I couldn't put any weight on the knee. Other than that, before this time, Zumba class is what I love. That may be in what did me in. I don't know. But it's great and it's fun and you move and I'm hoping to get back to it, but not yet. But I would go a few times a week to the gym. In the summer, I'd swim as many days as I could, just a few laps. I'm not good for a long time. I did one half marathon about 8 years ago. That's what started the knee trouble. So I'm not recommending anything. But just those kinds of things, just regular stuff. I'll never over-exercise. I mean, ever. I know that, you know. So that's it. So thank you very much for having me.